Welcome to Funds That Won, where we dive into some of the world's most renowned investment funds. We'll interview investment managers across the alternative landscape and learn how they built their million and even billion dollar asset management empires. We'll explore teams, structures, strategies, and best practices in launching and running alternative investment funds. All right, today we got Thomas Wilkinson in the studio with us today. Thomas, welcome. Yeah.
Happy to be here.
We're going to be talking about All-In Ventures. All right, Ty, why don't you give me the elevator pitch on All-In Ventures?
Okay, I'll keep it quick to the elevator pitch. All-In Ventures is essentially the culmination of my life to this point. And when I think about like all the experiences I've had in my life, have kind of led to this point, and the timing's fantastic. So if I was going to start a fund in 2008 and 2009, it would have been real estate, because everything was pennies on the dollar. Similar scenarios happen in venture capital. There's been, over the last year, about 50 to 60% discount on valuations. And so when I look at that, I feel like everything's on sale. So the last 10 years of my life, I've spent my time investing in startups using my own cash. And when I had a few hits, people, my friends and family started wanting investing with me. So I did 27 deals, and we had great success with those first handful of deals, and just felt like the time was right to go big with it. And so we're launching our $20 million fund.
There we go. So it's a venture fund set yeah. out to invest in what type of companies?
Early stage, so pre-seed and seed rounds. And we'll invest in 50 different companies. And mostly out of tech transfer offices, out of universities. There's just a lot of fantastic technology that has been developed in university labs, funded by actually government grants most of the time, that just are never commercialized.
So tech transfers.
Yes.
Wait, I mean, go a little deeper there for me.
So it's called the TTO for short, tech transfer office, but every university, just about every university, has a tech transfer office where all the research that's happening from the PhDs and the professors that are at the university usually will end up at the tech transfer office. And so you could go look at the patents and why they were developed, who developed them, how much grant funding went into the patent. And a lot of them are fantastic ideas. Some of them are so-so ideas, but the genius in entrepreneurship is, you know, finding an opportunity that nobody else sees and being able to commercialize it, bring it to the mass market. So
you go purchase these patents from yeah. universities, and like, do you then place an entrepreneur with that business, or how do you think about that?
So a great question. So if we like the idea, then we'll purchase it. So we practice what we call nail it, then scale it, or a validation method. And so back, my very, very first deal in venture capital was a technology around deaf students. And so there was a handful of deaf students in the astronomy lab. What's the lab where you have like all the stars at the ceiling and the
professor? Yeah, I think that, yeah. Astronomy.
Okay. Well, the professor noticed there's a handful of deaf students in the classroom that would have an interpreter sitting right next to them. And they couldn't see the interpreter and whatever the professor was pointing at the same time. As like, obviously humans can't see two places at once. And so he wondered why in the heck nobody had solved that problem before. And so he got a grant for something over $700,000 to go develop something that could solve that problem. And so what he ended up doing was getting some smart glasses and pushing live interpretation of the ASL translation. So the interpreter was pulled out of the classroom. That way, wherever the student was looking, they were seeing both the ASL interpretation and whatever the professor was pointing to. And I'm looking at this patent, I'm like, that's really cool. Probably something that needs to be commercialized. And what my partner, Corbin Church, the professor at BYU, where I got started in entrepreneurship, taught us was before you like go all in on an idea, you need to see if people are willing to pay for it. And so there was this thing called an I-Corps grant at BYU. You could get $3,000 to validate a concept. So I used that $3,000 to buy a flight to San Antonio to an ed tech conference and to set up a booth. And we pretended like the business was already created and done. And what we wanted to see is if people were willing to pay for it, like pay for a deposit. And that's how you know if like something's for real. Because a lot of people, you ask them about, oh, I have this idea, and usually they want to be polite. Until they're ready to part with their money, you don't really get a good gauge of like how valuable the concept could be. But we had an overwhelming response at the EdTech conference. And so I flew back and I just was pumped out of my mind and surprised that BYU would sell it to me for just $10,000. So
they spent $700K on research.
Yeah.
And you bought it from them for 10.
That's right. Yeah,
that's so phenomenal.
10 grand. And so I had done sales while I was at school. And so I had some money saved, and Corbin, my professor, wanted to partner with me. So he put 50 grand in, I put 50 grand in, and we were off to the races. And it's so cool to see where that business is today. Not only are we in a handful of the largest universities in the country, but we now are commercialized in Tesla, Panasonic, Microsoft, Twitch, Universal Studios, that NASA is a new one. NFL Hall of Fame. And there's just so many cool applications for the technology. And that's where it all got started. And so that process we've done 27 different times. And the goal is with the fund that we supercharge that. And we do it 50 more times, except for with more resources. And we have an incubator now and a lot of cool stuff happening.
Wow. 50 companies. That's a lot of companies.
Yeah.
I mean, what made you land on that number?
So it's risky. We're in the earliest stages. And so when you're playing in that realm, you need to spread your bets out pretty wide. And the data shows since 1983 that if you put 100 bucks into every seed company that was ever started, you'd average about a 22% IRR. And so the closest approximation to that indexing of every seed startup is about 50 companies. You get like a 94% chance that you'll get an outlier in that spread.
Wow.
So that's why we chose 50.
Gotcha. Any specific industries you're targeting, or I guess company profile?
We're generalists by definition, but I mean, we focus on enterprise IT. It's a lot easier to figure out if a business is going to catch on when you're doing B2B. It's a lot harder to know if, you know, Kizik's, for example, if that's going to take off. That's really hard to know. And so that's where the focus is. But generally, especially in Utah, my belief is that this is where our fund is. We need more like deep tech type startups rather than just sales businesses. And so we have a deep belief in that we have technology here and innovators here that we can create some pretty awesome technology that's groundbreaking rather than just like a cool new widget, if that makes sense.
Mm, gotcha. And like, what percent of that do you plan on purchasing from universities? Is that like is that your strategy, or is that a piece of it? Do you have other sources of deal flow?
So that's the core to our strategy. What we told to our LPs, and I'm a heavy investor in the fund as well, is if we find a good deal, it doesn't matter where it came from. Like, it could be from Tel Aviv. If it's a good deal that fits, you know, a seed round and something that we believe in and have, you know, conviction, we'll do the deal. Mm. It just so happens that we get a ton of deal flow from the tech transfer offices, but we partnered up with a handful of the later stage funds here in Utah and across the country. And if a deal's just too early for them, they can send it down to us. We'll cook it in the oven for a little bit and send it back to them so they can write a check for it. In fact, just last week, I met a guy from Alumni Ventures. They manage like $1.4 billion, and said, we get deals pitched to us all the time that just aren't ready for us. Because when you're managing $1.4 billion, you can't write a check for $500,000 and have it move the needle for you.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of our fund, is a $20 million fund. We can write that check, and it's meaningful when that business succeeds. Mm. So
yeah, phenomenal. So these are primarily seed, pre-seed,
uh-huh,
stage companies.
That's right.
Gotcha. Now, I know you guys have a partnership with like an accelerator group. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And
yeah,
I know you guys got some deal flow coming out of there as well.
Yeah, so we're the anchor fund within that incubator. And so we see all those deals first. And so iHub is a charitable organization that was started by my partner, Corbin Church, and funded by some personal mentors of mine, at, you know, Todd Peterson, for example, and a handful of others that are known in here in Utah. And it's 20,000 square feet space. doTERRA, which is a large business here in Utah, donated that space to the incubator. We've got auditoriums, cafeteria space, free legal work is done for our startups, wow. Free accounting work. And startups, when they come into the incubator, they do their first act of charitable giving by giving 2% of their company to the incubator. And that way it's self-sustaining into perpetuity. But some pretty fantastic companies coming out of that space, and we're really excited about it. Something we didn't have the first 27 companies that we did. I think probably, before I forget, the most impactful piece of that is we have over 106 different mentors that have signed up already to mentor these students. And we see from the data that a startup has a 70% better chance of success if they have a mentor that's been in their space. Mm. And so we feel like those resources will really help the likelihood of success of our companies.
Gotcha. And sorry, you said students there. Is it students or is it just early stage?
It's early stage. So you know, we'll take, businesses. So the idea, we really want to focus on entrepreneurs 35 and younger. And that's more, you know, Corbin's piece. He wants to help the young people. And in fact, it's the best time to start a business is when you're younger. You don't have all of the, you know, financial obligations that you have as an older adult. You have more time. You have more energy. We feel like it's the best time ever to start a business.
Is there any, like, statistics or is it data driven in that way? Or is it really more of like, hey, these are the – I guess this is from the – incubator's perspective, not the funds.
Well, but the data shows that BYU is the fastest from graduation to starting a unicorn out of any university in the country. So yeah,
wait, say that
data
again.
Driven. So they measured of all the unicorns that were started, which university they came from, and how fast from graduation they started that unicorn. And BYU is the fastest, 6 years.
Wow. Yeah. No way. Yeah. I had no idea. I know there's a lot of statistics back in Utah, but I didn't know.
BYU specifically, which is cool. And Utah, my belief is that Utah is what Silicon Valley was 10 years ago. I think I have a strong conviction that in 10 years, we could have startups that eclipse the IPOs that Silicon Valley has had in the past. And the reason is there are a lot of sales-minded people here. So most people have an above-average ability to sell because of the sales culture that's here in Utah. That's incredibly important when it comes to being an entrepreneur. Number two, a lot of them have done church missions or like church service and in some way, shape or form. And so they have the ability to overcome rejection like no one else. Like selling Jesus is not easy, especially in this day and age, let alone selling your new software, right?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we've had a handful of enormous exits come out of the state now. And these individuals are incredibly giving, generous with their time, especially their network and their money. And so all of those things are pouring back into the state. No one's investing their time and money outside of Utah that I know that has had a big exit recently. And so all those things together create like a ball of momentum that my belief is that it's going to be fantastic for the future of Utah.
Wow, that's great. Okay, so it's $20 million. Your fund one, right? And where are you guys at? Are you is that closed or did you just launch?
We're getting there. We've got a lot of commitments, hard commitments, close to the $10 million, and we're really excited. We've got some big hitters that have been kind of anchor investors for us that that believe in us and believe in our same vision. And so the way I see it is, you know, the only difference between me and my limited partners is I'm just the active person on the day-to-day doing, you know, looking at the deals, doing the diligence and deciding which ones we invest in. I'm fully vested into the project. I've got my money in, my time in, my reputation. And at the end of the day, we hope it's a great outcome for everybody. You know, we hope we get much better than the 22% IRR, but that's our target.
Yeah, great. Well, tell me a little bit about, you know, how you put your team together and how you thought about that.
Well, you're one of my team members now, so.
So full disclosure, we, so you guys know I run a GP Stakes fund. We recently actually just took a stake and partnered with Allen Ventures. We really were excited about what they were doing. Loved the thesis. Obviously they're have a phenomenal track record. Yeah. So full disclosure there. Yeah, we are now partners and working with Allen. But yeah. Thanks. Tell me your core partner Steven.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet? How did you guys come to the point where you're like, and Corbin, hey, let's start a fund.
So Steven and I have been best friends since high school, and we always hoped that one day that we'd be able to work together. I went the sales and entrepreneurship path, and he went the institutional money manager path, and our lives kind of came back full circle. And when I decided to launch this fund, I just thought he was the perfect person to do that with, somebody I trusted. And it's a lot of work. It's hard work, and we spend a ton of time with each other, and so it's fun to do that with your best friend. And he's very strong in things where I'm weak, and I'm strong in places where he's weak, and you guys are strong in places that we're weak, and so that's why we brought you on board. But Steven previously managed over $400 million in Navigate Private Wealth and was at Charles Schwab before that, and brings an element to the investing space that I didn't have. And so love working with him. And then you and Adam are just phenomenal, just on the structure and the systems. And actually, the biggest value that you gave to us was something that we didn't notice until after we had signed the deal, was that you're helping us think bigger and think past fund one and two, which was really empowering, because I didn't think that I could even think that big. And so I appreciate you guys for that.
That's exciting. And then you also brought on Corbin Church, right?
Yeah. Corbin, paramount to this whole thing. Just been an incredible mentor for me, and he's had multiple several $100 million exits on his personal businesses, was the Entrepreneur of the Year of Ernst & Young in 2014. And he's kind of a savant. He's just a very unique, intelligent guy, and just loves entrepreneurship, loves ideas, and loves shaping the future.
Yeah, so. Phenomenal. Well, look, you're an emerging fund manager, but I wouldn't say you're an emerging investor by any means. Yeah. You've demonstrated that. Based on your track record so far. But, what's been your favorite or maybe hardest part about starting a fund?
My favorite part is, I wake up feeling like I'm living the dream. Like, I get to do something that I dreamt of when I was a kid. And so that's really fun. It's finally come to the point where I'm like, I've actually had the gumption to go for it and do it. And so that's been my favorite part. And then doing that with friends and people that I really care about. And also just I love venture capital, because making money's great, and investing in a private credit fund and all that stuff, that's so important. Like, real estate's very, very important. But venture is different in the fact that you actually are part of shaping the future of the human condition. And we're investing in a lot of things. Like, we have a deal in our fund right now that it could possibly change the way that human beings experience anxiety and addiction. And it's a technology from BYU that is groundbreaking. That's really cool. And if you can put your dollars behind that sort of stuff, and then when you're driving up and down the highway and seeing, hey, my dollars help fund that, and you're seeing those billboards, that's different. You don't get that with any other asset class. So I love that piece of it. That gets me really excited. And the fact that I can help shape the future and help guide, the technology in space here in Utah, that's really cool. What I would say I don't like, I don't love being behind a computer screen, on Excel and stuff like that. I don't love that piece.
So that's why you got partners who do that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe ask me in a couple of years. Maybe I'd have more things that I don't like. To this point, it feels
Let me ask you this. You've made 27 investments, right? What's been the hardest part about either managing those investments? Is it you know, dealing with the ones that you have to write off? Is it as a working with those, you know, portfolio companies? I'm sure, you know, a lot of those portfolio companies have had hardships of their own that you've had to help them navigate. Like, I'd love to hear some stories.
Having to let people go is not fun.
Yeah.
That's definitely not fun.
Have you had to fire a CEO yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
No, we haven't had to do that. That would be not so fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will at some point. I think the reason why it hasn't been so surprising to me is because I went into this investing into this space like knowing what I was getting into. I'd done research. I knew the failure rate. I knew it was going to be high, and I was comfortable with that from the get-go. And so when something goes belly up, I'm not surprised. I know that that's going to happen. And so I trust the data, and I trust, you know, the process of what we're doing. And so I kind of take those lows with a grain of salt. And so I try not to get too low, and I try not to get too high. I just try to stay even keel. And
well, because that was your own money on the line, you know, and on a lot of these first deals.
Well, so to be honest with you, I prefer to invest my own money. It's a whole lot less pressure.
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, when I have conviction behind something, like, I'd love to have my friends and family come along with me. Like, it's painful if we fail, you know.
Yeah.
That's painful. Like, you never want that. You know, if I could just have mountains of my own cash to do, I would do that. But you know, you could have a lot more impact when you pull some money together and do more.
Yeah. Well, what does the future of Allin Ventures look like for you guys?
Well, you know, we're going to do multiple funds, and we're going to keep growing. We're going to stay at the $50 to $75 million size, because that allows us to be in this early stage. And I think that that's where I get the I have the most passion for, and has the greatest impact. And we're going to have phenomenal results for our investors. Like, we have deep conviction behind that. And we have awesome partners behind us that are helping us set up the third-party administrators, the third-party audits. And the goal is that we go and dominate, and, you know, big sovereign wealth funds see what we're doing and see the third-party audited financials and see that we're the real deal. And, you know, it's funny, last week at the Greenwich Economic Forum with you guys, the gentleman gets up and mentions that, you know, when it comes to seed and pre-seed, we only invest on the coast because they're, you know, those are the only guys that know how to find the talent. Like, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. There's 7 billion people on this planet, and there's 2 funds that are going to find the only good ideas that are out there. It's ridiculous. So I believe in Utah. I believe in the flyover states. Like, we have very intelligent, hardworking people here that want to have an impact on the world and are really good people. And putting money behind them, we will see a return on investment, and the outcomes that we'll see will, you know, impact generations to come.
Phenomenal. Hey, what advice would you have, Tom, to somebody who's just getting started in this space?
If you can learn from fund launch partners, like, I mean, they have a wealth of knowledge, you know, for sure. Like, they, you know, just even the couple months that we've been working together, just we've kind of taken big strides moving forward with that. If you can join, you can go to Fund Launch Live, meet a lot of people that are doing the same thing. That's really helpful. And that was just simple advice.
What would you say to somebody who, like, has no experience and wants to get in, like, one day wants to run a venture fund? Would you say, because you and your partner both took very different routes, right? You went into sales and originally and started working with these companies. Your partner went into investment management, financial advising. Like, is there one route to get there based on your peers, or?
So there are a lot of different ways to get to it. I think there are 2 ways that I would say would be helpful, is if you could start making your own money and making your own bets. I think that it builds a muscle where you're able to take risk and evaluate, because when it's your own money on the line, like, it's different. And number 2, I think if you can work for a startup. Startups are really hard, and you're gonna be able to empathize with the founders. You'll have a better, like, if you're competing on a deal between 2 venture funds, you'll land the deal because you've been there in the trenches. My personal feeling, and no knock against those that, you know, go the iBanking path, but it's really hard to really know what it's like to start a business if you've been in an ivory tower, just kind of like watching it all happen. It's really easy to like commentate on the sidelines. Oh, they should have done this, they should have done this, should have done this. Until you've been in that spot, you don't really know. And so I think it's important if you're going to invest in venture capital that you have a taste of both sides.
Gotcha. So you like go work at a startup is probably the best thing somebody could do to actually get into venture capital.
I think so.
Cool. That's phenomenal. Well, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your previous experience. You told me a little bit about it, but it sounds like you went and sold, was it door to door? Is that you started out like right out of school?
Yeah.
Like, you just tell me about the journey a little bit more.
Door to door salesman. So I originally went to the Air Force Academy before my mission. I did a church mission in Brazil, and I came back, and a lot of things had changed. And my little brother at the time got into Harvard, and I wanted to transition from the academy to BYU. I just felt like that was the right spot for me, and there just was no money, right?
Yeah.
My parents were supporting my brother at Harvard, which is not cheap. And so I needed to figure out a way to kind of fend for myself. And my cousins got me in touch with Todd Peterson. And, you know, I just went out and knocked doors. And meantime, I'm studying mechanical engineering at BYU, which was so hard, by the way, so hard. And so I went out and sold, and I was horrible at it. I was not a great salesman. But eventually I picked it up and I figured it out and ended up, you know, being one of the top guys at the company. And it helped me pay tutors so I could get through BYU Mechanical Engineering. And, you know, we had a good run there at Vivint. We, you know, took the company public, and I had the top team, top fastest growing region in the company for multiple years in a row. And it was awesome. It just... that fueled everything.
And like, straight from there into kind of angel investing, right?
Well, yeah. So it was my second or third year in at Vivint. I was investing in startups and in real estate, and every dollar. Okay. I lived on 10% of what I made. Everything else was, you know, was invested or charitable and taxes. And, I'm surprised my wife didn't, you know, run off, because we did that house hacking method where you live in the basement, rent out the top.
Yeah.
And we moved 18 times with the job. And, but yeah, it was fun.
My goodness.
We go out every summer and have $0 in our bank account, 'cause we invested it all throughout the year. And
not a lot of people do that. They go buy Ferraris or Lambos but that's awesome.
Sure.
And then I know that you transitioned and one of your investments took off, and you ended up were you the CEO of that company then? Motiva?
Minovo.
Minovo. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Minovo was taking off. And like my last year at Vivint, I remember to this day what happened. We were sitting in a board meeting and I got like a message on my phone, and one of our portfolio companies had just exited. It was called Data Fleets. And I was looking at the article and I couldn't believe it. And we got into that deal super early, and I went heavy in that deal, heavier than I had in others. And it was a, you know, 11Xer in 13 months. And I was like, okay, it's time to kind of move on to the next chapter of my life. And even though I was doing great at Vivint and loved the people I worked with, I knew it was time to kind of move on. And there was another company called Minovo that I was really passionate about. And gosh, the market is enormous for it, because, you know, they're taking care of the issue that we have right now in America, is so many people that are getting older, you know, the baby boomer population, and nobody's going to school to be a nurse or a doctor. And so you have this delta where technology needs to bridge that gap, and Minovo was doing that. And I just thought, this is the future. I need to be a part of this. And so I left Vivint and went there, and we did an awesome job there, and things are coming along. And then we had a massive investor come in and kind of take the company to the next level. And at that time, it was perfect timing to start this fund. And so that's where we are.
Gotcha. And you said stepped away, if I'm right, just to go full time on the fund. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I guess more on the personal side, what habits do you have in your personal life that you feel like have attributed to your success?
Oh, I'm starting to get better at them. I think I've had times in my life where I've had really good habits, and then times in my life where I just like I'm out of harmony a little bit. I think there was a time where just, you know, within when I was at Vivint, I was not in harmony. I wasn't taking care of my mental health and my physical health. And I regret that. You know, I think that, you know, we're all a work in progress. And so at this point in time, like I'm getting the habits back that I feel like I'm in an amazing spot emotionally and mentally and physically. And I kind of noticed it when like I got down one day to like play with my son and play with his ball, and like my knees hurt, my elbows hurt, my shoulder hurts. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? I'm 30 something years old and I can't even move. And it's just, I wasn't sleeping. I was getting maybe 4 or 5 hours a night. And I thought that was like a badge of honor. Like, oh, I don't need to sleep.
Yeah.
Like you're lazy if you sleep. And so I made a big change about almost 2 years ago that I'm going to make a goal to get 8 hours of sleep, like routinely. And it's changed a lot for me. And my mental health better, my physical health better, my relationships are better, my relationships with my kids are better. I'm more present. And that's kind of spilled over to the rest of my life. But now something that I do that Casey Bob, one of my mentors, taught me is I do my Sunday planning, and I'm religious about that. I actually, the device I told you about that's going to change anxiety for the human race,
I use
that every morning. And that's kind of a teaser. I'll tell you guys about that another time. It really helps kind of regulate the dopamine and the GABA receptors in your brain. Hmm. And then I do my daily planning, and I do some scripture and meditation stuff. And then I work out, and I cold plunge.
So you got it. You're a morning routine guy.
Yeah, that's been really helpful for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's been going on for 2 years.
Well, I had the morning routine before. I just didn't have the sleep aspect. Really kind of like, cause yeah, the sleep thing made a huge difference.
What are some of your pet peeves about the venture capital industry, or honestly just business in general?
Yeah. I'm the type of guy that like, I believe in the underdog. Like, I feel like sometimes in business, like there's a little bit of a elitist mentality where like only the, you know, the most gifted can like produce returns or whatever. I don't love that. I think that everyone has their own zone of genius. It doesn't matter what your IQ is. I think that people view the world in so many different ways that I think that mentality isn't really helpful. And I think they miss out on a ton of opportunity. I think there's a ton of upside to see value where other people don't. I think that's good. Other pet peeves, I don't know. I think when money gets involved, sometimes people get a little bit different and weird. And I try to have an abundance mentality. I don't know. What are your pet peeves?
Mine? Yeah, that's no one's ever turned the question right back to me. I just don't like it when people don't do what they say they're going to do, you know, at the end of the day. Like, that, it drives me crazy. You know, if there's, I'm really big on setting, you know, proper expectations in all relationships, right? Yeah. Like, and that could be with a peer, that could be with a boss, that could be with, you know, someone you're managing. But, like, I just think there needs to be, you know, proper expectations set. And if you say you're going to do something, then just do it, right? Just
freaking do it. Like, yeah, I think, a lot of wasted time and energy.
Oh, man, that just drives me crazy. You know,
yeah,
like,
fair.
I mean, I was just talking to my business partner, Bridger, you know, about, we had had a discussion, I think, as a company about something like 8 months ago. And I explicitly remember, you know, that somebody was like, yeah, no, I'll get that done. You know, and it just never happened. And now we're paying the price for it today. Right. And it's like, you know, come on. Like, you know, why can't we just, so it's just kind of this repeating cataclysm.
I think we share that pet peeve. Yeah. Just feeling like, you know, you hire somebody and ask them to do a job, and then you don't want to feel like you have to like remind them to do that.
Yeah.
I feel that.
Well, Tom, really excited about All In Ventures. You guys have an awesome opportunity here. You've got the right experience, the right track record. You know, certainly qualified to get out and take down this fund. So, and are already doing it. I'm really excited for it. So,
thank you.
Thank you for coming on and sharing your story and everything about All In Ventures.
Thanks, man. Appreciate having me.
All information shared are solely the thoughts and opinions of the author or guests. Content is for educational purposes only. Do not take any information from the show as financial, investment, tax, or legal advice. Seek counsel from a licensed professional before taking action in any business pursuit. We're not selling or soliciting a security in any way, shape, or form. The host may maintain positions in securities discussed on this podcast. Guests on the show may be current or historical clients of Fund Launch, Fund Launch Partners, or Black Card Capital Partners.